May it please the court. The issue before the court is whether a gun found in a refrigerator in the garage of co-defendant Jesus Cavazos' residence was reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Zapata-Lara in the course of the jointly undertaken criminal activity. The enhancement in question here, 2D1.1B1, according to the application notes, reflects the increased danger of violence when drug traffickers possess weapons. The note further provides that the enhancement applies if the weapon is present, unless it is clearly improbable that the weapon was connected to the offense, which begs the question of what does present mean. This court has elaborated that it is a temporal and spatial relation between the weapon, the trafficking, and the defendant. Put differently, the government needs to show that the weapon was found in the same location, either where the drugs were stored or where part of the transaction occurred. In order to hold a co-defendant responsible, or a defendant responsible for the possession of a co-defendant, the possession of the weapon must be reasonably foreseeable in the course of the jointly undertaken criminal activity under the relevant conduct guideline 1B1.3. And in this case, based on the facts that we have, the possession of the weapon was not reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Zapata-Lara. The facts are a little bit sketchy from the PSR, but we know from them that co-defendant Omar Milano was contacted by someone who turned out to be the government's confidential informant seeking to purchase an amount of cocaine. Mr. Milano asked his brother, Victor Milano, a co-defendant in this case, or he was an unindicted co-conspirator in this case, if he knew anybody who could provide it. Mr. Milano asked Mr. Zapata-Lara if he knew such a person. Mr. Zapata-Lara spoke to co-defendant Jesus Cavazos, who said that he could provide 5 kilograms of cocaine as requested. The purchaser would be in town on November 14th, 2008, and that was the date set for the transaction. Mr. Cavazos said that he would arrange for the cocaine to be delivered to his residence and that everybody should come there to complete the transaction. On November 14, 2008, Mr. Zapata-Lara left work and went to Mr. Cavazos' residence. He was joined by Victor and Omar Milano, the confidential source, and the transaction took place in the driveway of Mr. Cavazos' residence. The cocaine was placed under the hood of a Ford F-150 truck on the engine block. It's not clear how the truck got there. It's not clear exactly how the cocaine got there, but it was Mr. Cavazos who said that he would arrange for it. He was the one who opened the hood and presented the cocaine to the buyer. Later, we find out that the firearm is not registered. It was in the garage about 15 feet away in a refrigerator.
When did either the informant or the police discover the gun?
There were two searches. There was the immediate search after the transaction occurred, and then there was a subsequent search. I'm not sure we know the date of that, but it was sort of the second sweep through the house.
They didn't find the first sweep?
Correct.
Did not. Okay. And how much time elapsed between the two searches?
The record doesn't really give us that information.
It was all while the police were there, they made two searches.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I mean, police didn't come and make a sweep and then leave and come back and make another sweep.
I'm not really sure. The record really doesn't reveal that it was exactly the same time, or whether it was separated by a day or something like of that nature. So the firearm is not registered. It's not clear how the truck or the cocaine arrived at Mr. Cavazos' residence. It was registered to someone who was not any of the co-conspirators. We find out later also that the residence actually belongs to Mr. Cavazos' mother. So the transaction is taking place not in her house, but in the driveway in front of her house out in broad daylight. For these reasons, a firearm would not be foreseeable to Mr. Zapata-Lara, who was found by the district court to be a minor participant, a go-between. It was apparently not. There were no discussion of firearms. There's no indication Mr. Zapata-Lara had ever been to Mr. Cavazos' residence before, nor is there any indication that the residence was used for drug trafficking other than this transaction, which is somewhat fortuitous that it took place in the driveway. It could have taken place anywhere. There's no indication that drugs were stored anywhere near the gun, and there's not an ongoing conspiracy from which you could draw an inference that weapons were involved, unlike many other cases that this court...
Zapata, presumably, we can infer that he knew the cocaine was there.
Yes.
Before they arrived, he knew it was under the hood of the truck.
I'm not sure at what point he became aware that it was under the hood of the truck specifically.
But he knew it was on the premise.
He knew that there was going to be cocaine at this location.
And a large amount of it.
Yes, 5 kilograms.
I mean, why isn't that enough to let him foresee that there are likely guns in the area? I mean, we have cases saying that guns and drugs go together, and if you know that drugs are there, you can assume that guns are not far away.
Well, the facts of those cases are actually fairly different to the facts here. The overwhelming majority of those cases are not reasonable foreseeability cases. They are where the defendant has on the premises guns and drugs. It's attributed then to the defendant. So the person who'd be standing in the shoes of that person in this case would be Jesus Cavazos. It is quite arguable that he should be held responsible for the gun found at his residence, even though we don't know that gun belonged to him. But it is a reasonable inference to draw that at his residence, inside the garage, kind of hidden away, was this firearm. But it doesn't make it foreseeable as to someone else who's got no connection to that residence.
I thought we had cases that said that where you have a conspiracy, can assume that a co-conspirator, or at least some of the participants in the drug deal, have guns.
Well, not without more, Your Honor. There's got to be more of a connection. Either there's a long enough conspiracy where you can draw that conclusion, where there's been discussion about firearms, someone has possessed a firearm at various points during the conspiracy. This case is really different because it's kind of a one-shot deal. It's one afternoon. There's no indication that there was any discussion of firearms. The court has never held that the enhancement is automatic in any way. And even in the cases where the court has said that guns are tools of the trade, there's been more there. There's been either the defendant himself has the gun at his residence, there's a longer conspiracy, guns are discussed, there's a witness saying, I saw that guy with a gun, and he was with the co-defendant who the gun is now attributable to. We just don't have that here. The locus of the transaction is very small in this case. It's the driveway, it's this truck, it's this engine block. It isn't like drugs were being dealt out of the home and stored in the home where you find the drugs and the guns together.
I mean, do we even know that the gun was there at the time of the transaction?
Not for certain, Your Honor. We can draw the inference that it might have been there, but we don't know for certain because it was recovered later. And we don't know who the gun belonged to. There are no prints that were taken, apparently, or there were none on there. I'm not sure which, but there's nothing tying the gun to any specific person. I mean, it could have been the mother's gun, for all we know.
And we need both. We need to tie it to a specific conspirator, and then it also has to be foreseeable to your client.
Correct, Your Honor. First, you do the analysis about whether the weapon was actually present and can be attributable to Mr. Cavazos, and then you would need to do the further analysis of unforeseeability under relevant conduct to make it applicable to Mr. Zapata Lara. For example, I think a good case that's very different from this one is the case the government cites, Aguilar Zapata. The court didn't actually find that the facts were enough because those findings had not been made by the district court. It was actually remanded for findings. There is dictum that there certainly is sufficient evidence or something to that effect, but that really is dictum. Even if it weren't, however, the facts are so different from this case, and they really show what's lacking here. In Aguilar Zapata, you have a co-defendant with a gun on his person, not 15 feet away in another structure, on his person. The gun had been out, passed to him from another participant, and he was sitting on bales of marijuana in the back of a truck. Now, that is foreseeable. This is not. It's fortuitous.
Did Cavazos live at that house? Was that where he lived?
That is his residence.
I mean, who else would you impute possession of the gun to?
I don't know how many other people live there other than the mother. It could be the mother's boyfriend's gun. It could be there from some other occasion entirely. It's pure speculation, which is not a preponderance of the evidence. I mean, certainly those things are possible, but possible is not a preponderance. The government simply has to show more. It needs to be some sort of connection between the gun, the defendant, and the transaction. And the court has never held in a case like this that this is enough. This case is actually quite similar to Ramos in that was, in some ways, I think the facts are worse than my facts, because although there are two Ramos brothers, Jaime is the one who is less culpable, I believe, and he had been to a meeting seeking to purchase firearms, and he was found not to be responsible for firearms that were found at his brother's stash house. I think that is certainly more foreseeable in a longer-running conspiracy involving firearms, that firearms would be involved somewhere, including at the stash house, than here, where it's a single transaction. And the government says that it's distinguishable because it's a bigger conspiracy, but I think that actually weighs in my favor because there are more data points to draw information from. And there are only five defendants in Ramos, and in my case, there are three, and an unindicted co-conspirator and a confidential source. So they're actually about the same number of participants. So it's fairly similar in that case. The only distinguishing factor is that Jaime Ramos had not been to the stash house. But there's no indication Mr. Aguilar Zapata had ever been to Mr. Cavazos' house other than that afternoon. So we're talking a number of hours, maybe, difference in terms of the contact with the location over a long-running conspiracy involving firearms. So I actually think my case is better than Ramos. And under Ramos, the gun was not foreseeable to Mr. Zapata Lara.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lando. I think we have your argument. Okay, Ms. Stern.
May it please the court. Good morning. I'd like to start off by pointing out a fact that seemed to we needed to straighten out. During the rearrangement, the prosecutor proffered the facts, and that's on page 3 of the government's brief. And at the last thing the prosecutor said was that Hector Zapata furthered the unlawful purpose of the agreement by storing the cocaine in the engine of his truck. So from that statement, Zapata Lara is the one who brought the cocaine, and Zapata Lara pled guilty to that statement of fact. So we certainly know Zapata Lara was aware that the cocaine was there and that he brought it. I mean, the government would submit, not that it makes a difference at this point, we're not arguing it, but finding that he was a minimal participant in this drug transaction was, the government doesn't necessarily agree with that finding by the district court. This is a one-time 5-kilogram cocaine transaction in which Zapata Lara found the seller and put them together and brought the drugs to the transaction. So although he was found to be a minimal participant by the district court, I mean, factually, the government doesn't necessarily agree. We didn't appeal on that basis, but I would just like to point out that he was certainly a major participant in this one drug transaction.
Mr. Stern, let me ask you something. As I read our cases, there are at least two ways you can prove possession of a weapon in connection with a drug transaction. One is where you can infer that the defendant actually had possession of the gun himself.
Correct.
And that doesn't work here, does it?
Not for Zapata. That's where Cavazos comes in. Obviously, you have to...
But then the second way you can prove it is that a co-conspirator possessed the weapon, the defendant, who's a co-conspirator with the possessor, could reasonably foresee that possession. Now, the problem I see with your position is the judge never made that finding.
I believe the judge did make the finding, Your Honor. It might not have been as artfully spoken as it could have, but on page 7 of the government's brief, in response to these arguments being made before the court, the public defender made these same arguments, Your Honor, that it wasn't foreseeable and that, therefore, Mr. Zapata should not be held responsible. So the court heard those arguments, and also there was written submissions. The court responded, a gun is a well-accepted, well-known tool of the trade. It's been clearly established by precedent that the presence of a gun at an event such as this involving the conveyance of 5.5 kilos of cocaine or the sale of 5.5 kilos of cocaine, that a gun would be present. and so I overruled that objection. That was the court's finding, that the gun was foreseeable in this type of a drug transaction where there's 5 kilos of coke. The Fifth Circuit, I would disagree with my co-counsel, the Fifth Circuit is replete with cases in which there's a large drug transaction, and there are numerous unpublished cases that I looked at before I came down here in preparation that basically say if you're involved in a large drug transaction and one of your co-defendants possesses a weapon, that's reasonably foreseeable to you because guns are a well-known tool of the trade, and it's well known that drug dealers carry weapons.
What do you do with the Ramos decision?
What do I do with it, Your Honor? I think it's distinguishable from this case. First of all, in the Ramos case, it's not just distinguishable because it was a large drug transaction, but the facts, they're a little sketchy in terms of what's laid out in the Ramos case regarding the defendant who was not held responsible. But the weapon was found at a stash house, and there was no evidence that this particular defendant had ever been to the stash house. That stash house was not the site of the one and only drug transaction that took place in that case. There was a very small amount of drugs found at that stash house in the Ramos case, and no evidence that this particular defendant, who they said was a minor participant in the case, had ever been to that stash house or, you know, was even aware of its presence. And I would urge the court to read, and that's in the case. And therefore, it's basically, I think, a fairness ruling by the Fifth Circuit.
Here's what our court said in Ramos. Just read you a couple of sentences when you're aware of them. But it says, because the government has not proven that Jaime Ramos even knew of the existence of the seized weapons, we cannot conclude that he reasonably could foresee their use. While there is no doubt that the use of firearms was a significant aspect of this drug conspiracy, this fact alone is insufficient to justify the two-point enhancement in Jaime Ramos' offense level.
I understand that, Your Honor, and I do think Ramos and Aguilera are a little bit hard. I think Ramos stands on its own. There's many, many, many other cases in the Fifth Circuit where the court finds, here's the language, sentencing courts may ordinarily infer that a defendant should have foreseen a co-defendant's possession of a dangerous weapon, such as a firearm, if the government demonstrates that another participant knowingly possessed the weapon while he and the defendant committed the offense by jointly engaging in concerted criminal activity involving a quantity of a narcotic sufficient to support an inference of intent to distribute. That is over and over and over again in the Fifth Circuit cases.
I mean, the district judge, as I read what you just read to me, as I had reviewed earlier, I don't see where the judge found that Cervellos possess this weapon.
Zapato, that I believe what I've read to you from the court.
I mean, all the judge said was,
I find it's foreseeable, basically, is what he said in so many words.
He said it's foreseeable that guns will be in the area, but he never says that Cervellos possessed the gun.
No, he said it was foreseeable to him, and that's why he's holding him responsible.
The judge found that Cavazos possessed the gun, or even that the gun was there at the time. We don't even know it was there at the time.
Well, Your Honor, no one's
get to the foreseeability if we don't find that any of the co-conspirators possessed the gun at the time.
Nobody made that argument to the court. That's not the argument that's made by Zapata in his brief. There's no argument on that basis, Your Honor, and that's why the court didn't rule on that. This was Zapata before the court, not Cavazos. But I will go over what I believe supports.
It is very relevant. You cannot get to the question of foreseeability to Zapata.
I agree 100%. And I'll tell you why I think. Sure.
If I could finish, thank you. Until you show that Cavazos possessed it at the time. And the problem that you have with that is twofold. There's all these other people that could have put it in the refrigerator, his mom and whoever else. And we don't even know it was there at the time.
Well, I disagree that it's more likely than not that anyone else could have put that gun in the refrigerator 15 feet away from where Cavazos is conducting drug transactions. Your Honor, we have to remember the factual finding of the court that will be upheld if its finding is plausible in light of the record as a whole. Here's what the record shows as far as Cavazos, and I agree 100% that we have to show that Cavazos possess the weapon, but the cases say we must prove a gun was present at the transaction. Gun is hidden only 15 feet away inside of a refrigerator where the drug transaction is taking place. Highly, highly unlikely that it belongs to his mother. He's hiding it in the place where he conducts his drug transactions.
Does anybody else live in the house?
All we know is that the mother lives in the house. The weapon is clearly of the type involved in drug trafficking. This is a Glock 40 caliber weapon, fully loaded. It has two serial numbers on it, one on the barrel, one on the weapon, which lends more credibility that it's being possessed for illegal purposes.
Well, my only problem is I think there probably was evidence from which the judge could have found that Savazos possessed the weapon, but he didn't make the finding.
No one asked him to make that finding. I agree, Your Honor. He may have made it during Cavazos' sentencing. I'm not certain if they all took place at the same time, but Cavazos was held responsible for the weapon in his case, Your Honor. And that issue wasn't, he wasn't being asked to determine that issue in Zapata's case. But I'm.
If it's a critical element, though, of being able to infer that Zapata possessed it because he could foresee that a co-defendant, a co-conspirator, possessed it. I mean,
I think it was implicitly found. I'm not saying, obviously, it wasn't directly found by the court, but you don't get to the issue of foreseeability unless you find another co-defendant possessed it. And I agree with that 100%. And it's the defendant's burden to show it's clearly improbable that that weapon was connected to the offense. And in this case, the government submits, it's clearly probable the weapon was connected. Cavazos had never dealt with these particular people before. It's a Glock weapon that drug dealers use in their drug trade. That cases are replete with Glocks being used by law enforcement and by drug dealers. It's only 15 feet away from this transaction that's happening in the driveway. Likely, if the transaction had proceeded, they might have gone right into the garage to conduct it, where the gun is right there, where Cavazos can go get it in case something goes wrong. He's hiding it in the refrigerator of his mother's house because he doesn't want his mother to know he's got a gun or what he's doing. It's just clearly probable the weapon was connected with the offense and that it belonged to Cavazos. And then the foreseeability issue, I would submit as an easier issue if you find that Cavazos possessed the weapon. And I believe the facts of this case, that the court implicitly found that, or it couldn't have gotten to the foreseeability issue, and that the defendant has not shown as clearly improbable that that weapon was connected to this offense. I would say exactly the opposite.
You don't get to that presumption, do you, until you prove the possession by one way or the other? In other words, that's the element that the gun is involved in the drug transaction. That presumption applies once you prove possession, either through personal possession or possession by a co-conspirator.
You're right, and I submit the evidence is plausible on the record as a whole that this weapon was possessed by Cavazos in connection with this offense.
Okay, I think we have your argument. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Lando?
The government discussed an admission at rearrangement, and I feel like some clarification is in order. At the very end of the prosecutor's factual proffer, it says the defendants knew the unlawful purpose of the agreement, I apologize for reading the court, and joined in it willfully, that is, with the intent to further the unlawful purpose. Hector M. Zapata Lara furthered the unlawful purpose of the agreement by storing the cocaine on the engine of the truck. He did not admit that that was his truck or that he drove it there. The PSR doesn't reflect that. There's really no development of that fact. We know there is a truck, and I don't know what store means. Did he further the unlawful purpose by standing there while Jesus Cavazos put it there? It's really unclear, and I think that's ambiguous in terms of who drove what where. In the end, I'm not sure that it matters, but I think the record is open on that question. I also wanted to correct something else. The government had talked about a minimal role adjustment. Mr. Zapata Lara only got a minor role adjustment, which is probably commensurate with his involvement in the case. And as the government noted, if it had wanted to challenge that minor role issue, it could have appealed that. The government further says that the court's record is replete with cases like this, but the government hasn't shared any of those cases with us. And if the government is serious about that, I'd like the opportunity to respond, because the cases they do cite are pretty different from this one. In addition to Ramos, which we discussed earlier, there's also Cisneros-Gutierrez, which is in my brief. And there, that is also a foreseeability case. The co-defendant was the brother. There are numerous drug runs involved. And the co-defendant, who the gun was attributed to, had been to the house of the defendant numerous times and had spent the night there before the search happened. So there you have that nexus. It's much clearer that the guns are tied to the transaction and that those guns were foreseeable to the co-defendant. We really don't have that here. And Judge Davis, you're absolutely right. The government talks about me having to show that it's clearly improbable. That's only once the government demonstrates that nexus. And that only applies to Mr. Cavazos in this case. The government had to make a further showing of foreseeability, even after showing that Mr. Cavazos possessed the gun. And I'm not even sure they made their burden there in this case. The district court's findings are insufficient. There's sort of a cursory mention of tools of the trade. It's not clear to my reading whether that tools of the trade is as to Mr. Cavazos or whether that's a foreseeability finding, but either way, it's kind of half a finding. You can't sort of incant tools of the trade and have that be a finding as to possession and foreseeability. And these court's cases have really required more. Usually, when a foreseeability finding is made, the gun is on the person at the drug transaction, and that is foreseeable. Or the guns and drugs are stored somewhere, and the co-defendant has been there many times, making it foreseeable to him that there would be guns involved in the drug transactions. In any case, this is very different. The government hasn't made its showing as to the nexus. And the argument as to the nature of the firearm, this is the first time I've heard that argument. It's not in the briefing, nor was it made in district court. And I'm not really sure how that makes it more foreseeable. I think it only...
Well, there is, I forget the name of the case, but there's a case that talks about a hunting rifle being stored in a closet or something.
Yes, that's an application note.
All right, but that still deals with the type of weapon could make a difference.
Okay, in that sense, I understand. It's not clearly not applicable like a hunting rifle would be, but it doesn't really get us to it being Mr. Cavazos' gun or that gun would be foreseeable to Mr. Zapata Lara. Finally, I would just like to ask whether the enhancement in this case really squares with the policy of the enhancement generally. The enhancement reflects an increased danger of violence. That danger of violence really wasn't present here because there's no indication that Mr. Cavazos really possessed the gun, that it really was accessible to him in this transaction, much less that Mr. Zapata Lara knew about it. None of the other participants were armed. This is out in broad daylight. This isn't the kind of case where the enhancement should apply.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. We have your case.